Like, I'm not going to start saying that because I'm not a teenager. But in 10 years, once eat is just a thing that everybody says, like, I'll be saying it all the time. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. It would probably be strange if you show up in high school and you're like, this is pretty yeet, kids.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, don't.
Yeah.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 164 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm incapable of sleep.
I'm Sam, and I'm the IT.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is August Dirt Queen, 20 crates of beans.
What?
Dirt Queen?
Before we get started, we have a warning. Uh-huh. Anything could happen on this show?
This is true. Dirt Queens. Various kinds of golems.
20 crates of beans.
There's going to be profanity and weird stuff. So if that's not your bag, then you scoot your bum.
Go get a more boring bag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that scenario.
That's right.
I've actually been thinking about this. When I listened to you guys do your casts, the last two casts, mm-hmm. And I heard those, you know, the introduction where it's like, you know, kids, please get the fuck out because, you know, this is danger territory.
It's danger time.
But, you know, I think
this is the third rail of parenting.
Yeah, but I think kids need to just grow the fuck up.
Maybe.
They eventually will. So
I'm thinking maybe we should actually have like an anti-warning. We would just say
get your kids in here. They need to hear this.
They need to hear profanity. They need to get desensitized to the horrors of the universe.
Yep.
Just as early as possible.
You want to prep them for life. Childhood, who needs it?
Yeah. Who needs it? Just, you know, just get that innocence right on.
We're closing in on the apocalypse. So you
exactly. I mean, if you're a parent and you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know if I should have my kids listen because, you know, profanity. But, you know, the least of your worries in the entire universe around your kids having a healthy, you know, happy lives is the profanity spoken on this podcast.
That's probably true.
So, you know, just maybe.
How come people are always worried about profanity ruining their children? They never worry about it ruining themselves.
Because everyone's already ruined by the time, you know, by the time you hit 15 or so. Yeah, you're like,
I guess
I'm destroyed.
And I guess it was profanity.
I am just a husk of a person.
And it was profanity that did that. I think we can all agree. I mean, there's not an adult that I've ever met who, when we got down to it, talking deep. Like, where did all of your problems come from?
Like, I think it's because I heard somebody say the word shit once.
Yeah, and that just scarred me.
It just sunk right in there, and I never got it out of my soul.
Yeah, got that shit stain. Just in there.
It's just in there. We also want to thank our Ko-Fi supporters, which is us people who gave us money over at moneygrab.bscotch.net.
Thanks for the money.
Thanks for that money. We want to thank Zacy, who said, thanks for a great stream, Seth. It gets better every week. So I streamed game dev. I didn't do it last weekend, though.
Which then makes you wonder, if he didn't do it last week, but it gets better every week, what's he trying to say?
What I think he was trying to say is maybe if I just wait a long time and then do it, you know, based on how compound interest works, it'll just be real fucking good if I just do it like 6 months from now.
So he wasn't saying that, but that you not doing it was the best one of all so far.
He could have been. Because, I mean, it would have been. It would have been this past weekend.
That's true. Zacy's got a lot of sass.
Yeah. He said it gets better every week. He didn't say, you know, whether I do it or not.
Right,
it's
right.
It's just better.
Yeah.
Period. Also, we want to thank Anonymous. Very noble.
Yes.
Didn't even put their name on it.
Very respectable. Also, we appreciate all the podcast questions you've asked. Anonymous.
Yeah. Anonymous is doing great work over there.
A lot of diversity and kind of opinions and writing styles. Very interesting person.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they keep hacking things.
Yep.
Which is also that. You know, that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also we have several recurring Ko-Fi supporters who are giving us just money all the time.
$400.
$4 a month. It's crazy.
We're just floating in ones over here.
Yeah. So thank you very much for that. It helps us offset the cost of the podcast. And, you know, we appreciate it. We also got some stuff in the mail. Dwarven Jester sent us a cement block.
Thanks for that.
That he poured. So this was in honor of the new office. He was like, you know, you need a good, strong foundation for your new office.
It's like a cornerstone.
Yeah, it's like a cornerstone brick.
So he made a block of cement. He poured it himself, and then he took a bunch of wood letters and spelled out, "Can we not?" and stuck it in the cement. And then he forgot to put any kind of sort of lubricant on the letters.
Uh-huh.
So then he just cemented them in there.
They were supposed to come out.
They were supposed to come out so that it would be kind of like an engraved, you know, thing.
Like a very fancy 1920s style block. Okay.
Yeah. And then he wrote a letter explaining how he was trying to get the letters out, but he couldn't figure it out. And then he thought, well, can I just not get the letters out? And then he
turns out the answer is yes.
Yeah. So
I think our plan now is to throw it into the fire. At some point, as part of our, you know, burn it down is one of our other slogans. We're going to put that in the fire, just burn the wood out.
Yep.
And then everybody wins.
And that is our general policy is we pretty much burn everything that everybody sends us.
Yeah. whatever it looks like when it's done, that's the thing we now have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really saves space.
There's a gift pyre, and then there's like a cremation jar.
We have sort of a Viking funeral for all these things. Also, somebody sent us a book called 5000 BC, and we don't know who sent it, and we don't know why.
There's no letter.
It just appeared. It might have been from Anonymous.
Was there a name on the the return address?
No. It was ordered directly from some place, and then it came to us, and the person who sent it, their name wasn't on there. Mm-hmm. It was just from the company.
Completely anonymous.
So it's this book of riddles, which I don't know if that's also like, are we trapped in some meta situation? Figure out who it was. I don't know.
I don't know. But anyway, so thanks for that book. It's a mystery. It's
whoever and why ever you have sent it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So otherwise, we are back in action. Everybody's back now. Adam was gone for a couple weeks. Sam was gone. You know, we had to pre-record last week's podcast the week before, and it was just been chaos. We're back now. It's not a ghost town.
Yep.
And we're also going to PAX soon.
Yes, end of the month. PAX West.
In 3 weekends.
Mm-hmm. 3 weekends.
Yes, weekends 3.
So why are we doing that? Who goes there? What's the problem?
So the major,
what's the deal?
The major point for us of going to PAX, we're not demoing, which is an important note. We've talked in the past about going to conventions and why you might go and also why you might not go. And the reality is that it costs a lot of money, right? So even just going, we have to get out there to Seattle.
You got to stay in a hotel. You got to Uber around or whatever.
Eat food.
You lose production time.
Right. So the question is, what's the point? And for us, it's, we haven't actually gotten to show Levelhead to any press, to any platforms, to anybody in person for about 6 months. So yeah, since GDC. And obviously the game has just grown and grown and grown and turned into this big wild thing. And so for us, it's actually mainly to go and schmooze. So we go talk to press. We go try to, get a hold of our platform contacts, see if they're in town, see if we can get a meeting with them. And then mainly, actually, this time around, we wanted to just go because we've never gone to an event as people who like games.
Yeah, we've never been to PAX. We've demoed on a floor of PAX.
Right.
But we've never just been there.
Gone. So, and one of my favorite things personally from the time we did go to PAX was actually not working the booth, but just running around talking to the other devs because that's where we met the team behind Supergiant and Clay and Behemoth and a couple of the big ones who we ended up kind of becoming friends with and getting some advice from, that sort of thing. So it's just really fun to actually go talk to people who are building all these cool games and just see them all on the show floor. So we're going to be doing some schmoozing.
Doing the schmoozing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, which I'm looking forward to that.
And so if you are going, come say hi.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably have our shirts on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or no shirts
or
on.
Either way,
you'll be able to spot us.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We'll be in cosplay as shirtless people.
Shirtless people.
Game devs.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be cosplaying as a peck dance.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So one of us will be a right peck, one the left peck.
And then we will dance.
You just bounce up and down.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Also, I want to talk about how we fucking called it. Discord is now Steam.
Yep.
Steam is now Discord.
I guess it was somewhere between 4 and 8 weeks ago. We talked about Discord adding this games tab and how we looked at that. We thought this is clearly the precursor to Discord opening up a store, which would be a brilliant move because everybody who has tried to open up a store to compete with Steam has done it just as a store. And if all you have is what Steam has but worse, then how could you possibly compete?
Right. And even if it's as good or better in terms of just the tech or whatever.
If it's still just a store.
If it's just a store, then now people's libraries aren't there. So where's the – having a better store is not a strong enough edge to get people.
Right, because you're asking people to abandon their previous store basically. Because it's not just a place where you buy stuff. It's also a place where there's communities and stuff like that. So Discord made the move of saying, well, we're not even going to worry about the store part. We're going to grow a community first of 100 million people, then start selling games to those people.
Further, they're saying, we understand that people don't want to split their libraries up. So you'll be able to launch your games from any of the other storefronts via the Discord client.
So it's the store to end all stores. And their claim is that they're going to be doing a lot of work with indies. They're going to be doing a lot of curated stuff. And it's not going to be the
it's not,
at least at first, right. It's not going to be the flood of content that you see on things like on mobile or on now Steam. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're going to be answering a market need. Yep. So
well, they certainly have the audience for it, which is always the hard part of these store things. Even the stores that have popped up that have done like a hard curatorial edge to them, where they're like, oh yeah, we're only going to select the best games or whatever else. They just haven't had an actual audience. So yeah. it just didn't matter. So yeah.
Yeah, I think the brilliant thing with Discord is that even if you're not buying games on there, you're still using it.
Yeah.
So maybe eventually you will. Mm-hmm. And it's very different than, you know, something like GOG or whatever, where it's like if you're not buying games on it, you're never gonna boot it up.
Right.
And that's what it's for, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know. I think it was a brilliant move. And yeah. I'm curious
to
see. It
does kind of make me wonder about So we use Discord for just our day-to-day work. So, you know, instead of Slack, we use Discord. And we're always telling other people, you should do the same, because it's just mm-hmm. so easy to drop in and out of. It's easy to build a community inside of. And it kind of has all the things that you would want that Slack already has and so on. So I've actually largely seen it as a sort of a Slack competitor primarily, right, yeah. less so as a gaming community and so on, because you can use it for anything. It's just a chat client. And yeah, you could see what games people were playing. Yeah, they have, you know, game overlay and stuff. But that it doesn't feel like a core part of that product. And so I always just felt like, okay, this is kind of a cool Slack competitor that has a lot of super useful game features. Mm-hmm. But now that games are going to be front and center, because there is a games tab, and they'll be like, when you pop open the client, the first thing you're going to see now is what games people are playing.
Yeah.
Then that's going to prevent this thing from kind of dominating Slack, because Slack is, you know, business software, right. really. And so that's actually going to prevent the possibility that Discord could just take over Slack.
Right. Because I think that wasn't the plan,
yeah. But I was kind of hoping that was what would happen. And it's still, there's no reason for it not to, except, of course, employers aren't going to want people to just look at games all day. Yeah.
So maybe the case that you Slack at work and then you Discord at home.
Right. Yeah, that's Slacking at work. That's
classic.
Classic. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably true. And we also got some comments from people after we had talked about Discord in the past about how one of the things that they liked about Slack was how, because it's totally compartmentalized, so instead of just logging into Slack and then seeing every Slack channel or every Slack group that you're a part of, you actually log in to just that group. So you go to your company's Slack URL, mm-hmm. and all you see is stuff from your company, right?
Which is a bit of a blur, you know?
Yeah, it's good because it compartmentalizes things and keeps you from getting distracted, but also it means you miss stuff if you're not specifically looking for it, so.
Well, I do want to talk about, I know there's two really interesting bits of news that happened this last week, which was, as far as like storefront stuff goes, which is that Fortnite, which is that giant battle royale game, decided to bypass Google Play.
They did.
So they're not launching through.
And they're already bypassing Steam.
Yep, they're already bypassing Steam. They're bypassing Google Play now, which means they're not launching through that store, which, and the whole reason for them is that they don't want to pay the 30% cut.
They're basically saying what Google Play would give them is an audience, but they already have one.
Yes, because it's literally
a phenomenon. So why would they pay somebody 30% of their revenue for something they already have?
Yeah.
Which is a good question.
It is, yeah. And to be clear, you know, if you're someone more in our position where we've got an audience, but it's not Fortnite. You know?
It's pretty close, but right. it's not quite.
Right. So we absolutely need, and it's kind of a bummer because Google Play and other stores don't necessarily have to provide anything. Like, they don't have to feature. They don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. The cut's the same no matter what they actually provide for
Correct.
You. The one thing that we just absolutely need and therefore just have to pay that cut for is the audience, because mm-hmm. we just don't have it. But yeah, but if you're Fortnite,
do whatever you want.
Do whatever good. You want.
And then Bethesda announced that Fallout 76, their new Fallout game, is going to be skipping Steam.
Yep.
Which is, again, like, these happened within 2 days of each other. I was like, what is happening? Because everyone's just sort of, I guess, you know, taking the moonshot, really, which is like, okay, can we just establish ourselves as ourselves instead of having to always go through this third-party entity? Yeah. And so it does beg this interesting question, which is, you know, if you do, you know, extremely well on one of these stores, like extremely well, in the case of Fallout with a, you know, long-term franchise that a lot of people love, or in the case of Fortnite, which is this just phenomenon that blew up.
And I'd also point out that Blizzard's been doing this.
Yes, Blizzard's been doing it for a while.
They did release
Hearthstone. They were around before Steam was around.
Yeah, and they did release Hearthstone onto Google Play and iOS. But, right. I mean, as far as all desktop stuff goes, they just have their own
right.
straight to customer.
But so. I think it also it made sense for them to launch on Google Play because for that kind of game that they made, like sure it's likely that Blizzard fans would play it to some extent, but it was such a casual game and it's such a wild card relative to their normal portfolio that I think for it to be successful they really needed to broaden out that audience. And
yeah,
so they couldn't just have the small fraction of their existing fan base go play that game. Mm-hmm. They had to go pull on some other existing large network.
Right. But I mean, it does beg the question to me of what that looks like for future stuff, right? Because, of course, these stores are gigantic. So it's always going to be a drop in the bucket. And Adam and I talked about this last week a little bit in terms of the revenue of the store, right? I mean, the store is huge. Yeah. So it's not going to necessarily hurt the store much at all for any one of these games to drop out. But it's an interesting shift, I think, in terms of like we haven't heard of this happening for I don't think I've ever heard of a game being like, yeah, we're just going to bypass, you know, Steam or whatever else. Of course, Epic was able to do it because they already had sort of the infrastructure in place. But
I think EA might do.
EA has some of their own. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's only some of these really, really gigantic. You can tell though.
You look at the franchise. It's not even the publisher necessarily, but it's the franchise. Because if you look at like EA and Ubisoft, mm-hmm. Some of their titles are on Steam and some are not.
Right.
And depending on the title, I think you can just tell like the ones that just have their own enormous following. Give them the option to say like, oh, we don't need to, you know, pay a bunch of money to Steam to get access to their user base because we already have the entirety. We've saturated this market. We already have everybody.
And I think it also speaks to it. It asks the question of what are you getting for that? You know, that 30% on a store that gets increasingly more and more just oversaturated and overcrowded, where if your game previously would it maybe like 5 years ago, if you launched, you know, Fallout or whatever, your game would dominate the front page of Steam for weeks. Mm-hmm. And if you know, the best you can hope for is a few days or something before some other thing pops up or your game just kind of gets mixed in, you know, with everything else, then that kind of dilutes the appeal of your game. It dilutes your visibility. It makes it harder to get users and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so – and not only that, but then if you think about the real math behind this 30% question is the difference for you then if you don't lose 30% is that you're making 42% more money.
Correct.
Right? So –
which is weird math to do.
Right. Because, so a percentage work, you know, a dollar divided by 70 cents is a 42% increase, right? Mm-hmm. And 42% is a huge difference, right?
It's a big revenue boost.
Yeah. And so even if you lose 10% of your players, you know, you're still, you know, which is, I don't know if that's even likely or with these giant games like Fallout, when they could just announce a mobile game the day that they launch it and have it dominate everything, right?
Yeah.
So they clearly have good marketing power. So this is going to be an interesting trend to see where that.
The rodeo continues.
Yeah. I honestly just don't think it's going to be a trend. I think it's going to be a thing where games that, because the fact is like the Bethesda sort of user base is not that far off the scale of all of Steam, you know?
Yeah.
The fraction of Steam.
The number of people who own Skyrim, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's all the people. And think about the ones who don't, though. The ones who don't have never and still will never play a Bethesda game.
Sure.
And of course, Bethesda's got this long track record. And I know for myself, back when Fallout 4 came out, well, I guess, and New Vegas, each time, like, I knew a year ahead of time those were coming out. I didn't know that from Steam. I just somehow knew because mm-hmm. I was a fan, and just somehow that knowledge appears when you're a fan, you know.
Because right. you're
just aware of it.
You're aware kind of it. So it. When as soon as it pops up somewhere where somebody else may not notice that article or whatever, you see it, you're like, ooh,
yeah. Or you just other people you know are also into it, and so it's you just somehow kind of hear about it, and then it's on your radar now. And so it wouldn't really matter where it appeared. I would go get those games, and I would know that it happened. And of course, if you're a person who's into games, you're talking to people about games.
So I mean,
all the
even
time.
If, even if they said, yeah, Fallout 76, it's going to be only in Target. We're going
to
make.
I would
make
go
box,
to Target.
We're going
to
make
it.
Box copies.
Well, maybe not for 76. I'm not interested in the multiplayer thing, but
right.
for the next. Real single Bethesda game, one, the right. single player one.
The next real one.
Not
these fake games.
No. Then for that, I'd be like, it's only available in this Target in, you know, in whatever, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. You'd be like, road trip.
Town.
Road trip time.
And it'll be a blast. Have a great
And also, when you got room. There, there'd be tons of other Fallout yep. fans.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what is up,
yeah.
my fellow humans?
Mm-hmm. That'd be pretty spectacular.
High five everybody on the way into Target. That'd be just an experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but all right, before we get on to some questions. We need to talk about, apparently we need to talk about dead person goals.
Yeah.
I don't know what this is.
Yes. So I was listening to this TED talk yesterday. I was driving back up from Iowa.
And it was done by a dead person.
Yeah.
No, you were driving down the globe.
All right. Shut your mouth. Right. So what? So I was listening to this TED talk, and it was this woman talking about this idea of basically just saying that, you know, wanting to not experience feelings, right, as a human being is just equivalent to having dead person goals. So she said the whole talk was about sort of being emotional, experiencing your actual feelings that you're having about a thing, letting them happen, whether it's grief or sadness or happiness or whatever else, and then sort of using that to, you know, enjoy your life as it is. And she apparently, you know, in talking to some people who are having trouble with various goals or whatever else, if they would say something like, oh yeah, I don't want to be – I really want to do this thing, but I don't want to be disappointed. Or I really want to do this thing, but I know it's just going to be really uncomfortable or hard. And her response apparently is, you have dead person goals, which is you have the only goal you have is the goal of a person who doesn't want to feel anything, which is not right. An appropriate sort of goal to have.
Or you're sort of using avoiding certain
having
emotions,
any feeling, right?
Yeah, yeah. As the driver for your life decision,
right? And I was thinking about it because I was like, it's an interesting thing. I mean, we talk a lot about goals and a lot about, you know, trying to figure out what's good and everything else on the podcast. And so I thought it was an interesting way to think about it is if your goal is mainly about not experiencing a discomforting emotion of some sort, because it's like a hard thing to do, whatever else, then maybe you should reconsider that, like whatever's going on there. Because not wanting to feel things is not really equivalent to like getting – a lot of things good out of life, it seems like.
So I've been watching Queer Eye.
Mm-hmm.
Great show.
Season 2 on Netflix?
Season 1 and 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I hadn't watched any of it ever before.
But the reboot specifically.
Yeah, the new one. And great show. Bring Kleenexes. It's very sentimental.
Yep.
But one kind of common trend that I noticed in general is almost every single person that they come in to help is somebody who in some way or another is sort of paralyzed by fear.
Mm.
And they might be scared of different things, right? Like there was a guy who was essentially – he was afraid of success. You know, so he always kind of – he never really put himself out there. He never tried to accomplish anything. And as a result, he just kind of lived this very – sort of everything was medium. You know, mm-hmm. His apartment was okay, but not in terrible shape, but also not very good shape. His clothes were – like everything was just kind of average. And he wasn't happy, but he also wasn't depressed. He was just kind of existing, right? Mm-hmm. And so he had this kind of fear of if he really went for something, he might fail, which is scary.
Yep.
But also he might succeed, which means things will change. And so instead, you just keep it on the level. Don't do anything crazy. Just keep maintaining, right? Or you see people who never go through the effort of trying to find good clothes that mm-hmm. fit. And the reason is because they worry that, you know, they might believe that they aren't attractive or something. Mm-hmm. And that even if they put on clothes that they think look good, that they still won't look good.
Right. So what's the point?
Right. And so then by never making that next step, you never have to sort of answer that question. And then you can just be comfortable in your gym shorts mm-hmm. and talk about how you value comfort instead of style.
Right.
So I feel like this is kind of connected mm-hmm. where like, People will do a lot in order to avoid discomfort.
Oh yeah,
which of course, I mean, it locks you in place.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a big thing, which is that a lot of just navigating life stuff is being very comfortable with chaos. Actually, I think being able to navigate these situations successfully is saying, okay, yeah, everything's going to change whether I fail or succeed or even try really really hard at this particular thing. Everything will change, and then having the tools where you feel like you're confident to be able to sort of negotiate whatever that change is going to be is, I think, something that – I mean, you never get taught it, you know.
Yeah.
And you don't get – there's no class about how to handle the fact that that your life is basically just chaos all the time, even when you are moving it to a point of, you know, higher success or whatever else, I think is kind of a bummer.
I do like the strategy that I think it was Tim Ferriss talks about, fear setting.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is – it's just the idea of basically just whatever it is that you're afraid of, just write it out and then – it's like a scenario planning, right? So you write out all the possible things, the horrible things that you think could go wrong
because of doing something.
Mm-hmm. But instead of just listing them, then also go one step deeper and say, well, then what would I do? Like, what would it mean if this horrible thing really did happen? And how would I respond to that? And would it really be as bad as I think mm-hmm. it would be? And generally, answer is no, it's probably not actually as bad as you think it would be.
But until you get it out, it seems like it, right? Which is the weird part.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of that bomb technician who, where somebody asked him, like, are you ever nervous about, mm-hmm. you know, clipping the wrong wire? And he's like, no, because if I do, then it's not my problem anymore.
Yeah.
So worst case scenario, you got no more problems. Yeah, that's an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah.
All right, let's get on some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.beastgotcha.net. So if you'd like to get your question onto a future episode, get over there and then do that. First question comes from Devo. Hey, guys. Awesome podcast. Changed my life. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
Wait, did he write blah, blah,
that's
blah?
That's what he said. Yeah. Anyway, excluding jam games, your most recent game release was Crashlands, right? Do you feel an overwhelming pressure for your next game release to be nearly or as successful as the Crashlands release was?
No.
Yeah, not really.
No, I mean, I want it to be at least half as successful so that we're back up at breaking even on
our costs.
That's
where I'm at, too.
That's my main goal.
There's a financial incentive there.
Yeah, first. I would love it to be a cultural icon, and, you know, I would love it if that was all were all the things that happened. But I feel no pressure for any of those things to happen. I just hope they do.
Yeah.
The only thing I feel pressure for is that I want to be able to keep doing this.
Where would that pressure come from if you did feel it? It would be internal, right? Like it would be because nobody outside cares how successful our games are.
No.
No.
Right? Well, like, why would they?
Well, I mean,
they might care about the game, right. But they don't care.
Not on our behalf.
Yeah, they don't care how many units it's sold. Well,
there's also this sense, though, that people have that if you know, say you're a novelist or say you're really anything, then every time that you put out the next thing, it's supposed to do better than the last one because you're supposed to be propelling your success forward. And that's a lot of what we've designed our way of doing things to try to actually do that, to capture that effect. But we also know that most of publishing an entertainment product is random chance. And we can stack the deck in all kinds of ways. We can do all kinds of stuff that make it more likely that things will go well. But the end result is just that likelihood times the chaos of launch. And so it just is true that it doesn't actually – how good our next game is and how much effort we put into it and how much we do things quote unquote right.
It's loosely coupled.
It's loosely coupled to the actual success of that game. So if Level comes out and does worse, despite what will be our belief that it's a better game than Crashlands and that – in all ways, it was designed with a higher – because I strongly believe it has a much higher likelihood of high success than Crashlands did. But that doesn't mean it's going to have that success.
Right.
Even if the likelihood is actually – even if all that is true,
mm-hmm.
That's actually not necessarily what's going to happen.
What's also funny in games because your second or your third game might be a completely different game than your first one, which is actually – it's interesting because the games market is not – you do think about it as a whole thing, but the reality is that there are types of people who buy types of games.
Yeah.
And so – Crashlands hit a very particular niche of people, which is sort of crafting or RPG enthusiasts of some regard, or people who just like goofy cartoonish stuff, right? Levelhead's going to hit a different audience. And I'm in the same boat Adam is, where I think it's the case that it has a bigger audience pool to pull from. And I think that everything about the game we've really tried to –
it's a more casual game.
Yeah, we've tried to be more conscientious about designing it such that it's possible for it to be much bigger than Crashlands. But by all means, that is not an expectation in terms of like – really thinking that's gonna
I don't know.
And there's, and we talked about on the cast before, the concept of regression to the mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which feels like a phenomenon, but it's just a description of the reality that on average things do average, and so you're gonna have some things that so Crashlands might have actually done better than it should have. We can't mm-hmm. know that, right? And so if Levelhead does
or worse
yep.
So if Levelhead does worse, that might just be, well, that's actually about how we can do.
Yep.
You know, it's just that we had an unexpected extra success with Crashlands. It could be that Crashlands did way worse than it should have.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, when Levelhead comes out, it might seem to do, you know, like 100x better, but it might actually not really have been 100x better in the eyes of the public. It could just be the random set of things. Right.
But since our sample size is so small and so infrequent in a constantly changing games landscape.
Yeah.
And we actually,
you just got to basically not attach any value judgment to the success of the thing.
Yeah.
Well, the value has to be attached to the thing itself and what you did to try to make it successful.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the trick. Right. You should be building the game such that it's, or I mean any product, whether it's a game or a story or whatever else, that such that it's both something you want to do and like a story you want to tell or a mechanic you want to explore,
And then also something that you think is market viable. Because if you think there's no market for it,
yeah,
like, that's not what we're saying about this. I'm just saying.
Yeah, we're not saying make something even if it's garbage. And then if it doesn't work out, that's not your fault.
Yeah.
Because it is your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did that.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Right. So there, yeah, there's a weird mixture of ownership and then, you know, sort of bowing to the chaos of.
Yeah, because you have to remember that success in anything, and that's just even because we're talking really about fear of success in life and fear of things changing and so on. All of these things are the compound of, I guess basically it's the sum of how much effort and skill and quality you put into the thing plus the random chaos of the universe, mm-hmm. right? And the more awesomeness and effort and skill you put in, the more you get to offset the chaos of the
universe. Or take advantage of it.
Use the chaos as a multiplier.
Exactly. So it is still on you to make the best mm-hmm. thing possible. But in the end, even if you do, that's not a guarantee. And if the final outcome after you did just the best thing you could and objectively a really good thing and it doesn't go well, then that's not a value judgment on you.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the problem that
it's just life.
Chaos just turned out to be larger than your effort, you know, right. in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or you didn't have a good backup plan.
Yeah.
Which is also happens a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's the thing about overinvestment that we're always kind of hitting on. People dumping 5 years into a project and it's their first game ever and it's going to run everything dry and then it doesn't go and then they're like, well, I guess we're done. Yep. And they close up shop.
Oh, yeah, I mean, still because of chaos, you always have to have insurance, you know. But mm-hmm. insurance is for the chaos. And if you put all your eggs in one basket, that's literally the opposite of having insurance. You know,
yes.
then that basket catches on fire. Now you got a bunch of boiled eggs or I guess burned eggs. I don't know, whatever.
Which is actually kind of the ideal state of eggs.
That's true.
But maybe then you just have an opportunity then at that point.
And you're like, yes, exactly. That's what I needed.
That's exactly what I was getting at.
I wanted those hot, hot fire eggs.
Yep. Metaphor did exactly as intended.
All right. Next question comes from ASLKEFJDF.
Is it just the middle?
I think somebody just kind of slapped the home row a little bit. Do you ever say – also I want to point out that whenever somebody's sort of like slapping the home row, it always starts with AS. Like the pinky ring finger always get in there first.
Mm-hmm. We're very left to right oriented because of the reading, you know?
That's true.
So does that mean if you're typing on an Arabic keyboard that it's whatever the right keys are?
One of our listeners needs to tell us about this.
But isn't it that in Arabic, sometimes two letters kind of come together to make one letter?
It's like a Megazording scenario.
Yeah, it's like a Power Rangers of language kind of a situation.
I know nothing.
I don't actually know if that's real. I think I saw it in a talk that Rami Ismail gave once. But I don't know how that works with keyboards.
Yeah, I don't know.
You got to merge. Well, same thing
with like Chinese, right? You just type sort of an abstract idea of the character, then the character appears because they're not a 50,000 keyboard. Or 50,000 mm-hmm. key keyboard that you type.
Although I think when
things were purely mechanical.
Yeah, when the typewriter was first sort of appearing, and then in China they were like, "We want those, but we have 50,000 characters." And then some guy was like, "I got this," and then he made this.
Is this like a pipe organ?
It was like this circular swivel chair thing you'd get into, and it just had just
imagine the skill of a person who could type on that. Just the.
Yeah, if you want to talk about hunt and peck typing, like that's something else.
But I bet that person, like, you wouldn't have been able to hunt and peck because you would never type anything. You know, you would have to just know, where everything is.
Well, it would have to be categorized. You know, you have to know sort of like regions of the keyboard mm-hmm. that would have certain like verbs are on this side mm-hmm. and adjectives are over here. That's crazy. I don't know.
It's too much.
Yeah,
too much.
All right. Well, let's get to the question, which was, do you ever say I'm sure. Then Sure comes out and says, "No, I'm sure."
Yes, actually. I believe it's
that
happened.
That happens a lot.
Well, good number of times. I don't think Sure has done it.
He has at least done it?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. We do it oftentimes also.
Sometimes somebody will say, "Yeah, do you want to do this?" And then the other person will pause and then they'll go, "Sure." And then Sure will take off his headphones. And he's like, "What?" We're like, "No, never mind." We've had to try to wiggle our vocabulary to, mm-hmm. you know, just say
yes.
Yeah. Sure also goes by Charles. So sometimes we use the word Charles instead of
sure.
But because,
sure
well, he no correct. Longer goes by
Charles.
Because
he no longer goes
so
by
now
Charles.
We can say Charles instead of sure, S-U-R-E. Yeah. Someone will be like, "Do you want to grab a burrito?" And you're like, "Charles."
Yep.
And then just keeps working. And it's
oblivious to anything.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Language. It's always evolving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was listening to I think it was maybe TED something mm-hmm. about language, and I had this interesting kind of revelation about how I'm at an age now where sometimes I get mad about words.
New ones?
New ones. Know? Yes. Mm. Like yeet, which is something that teens are doing. Mm. Teens are like, yeet. And I'm like, that
teens.
Seems
– Teens, man.
Yeah. But I heard a perspective on this, which made me kind of take a step back. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Why am I being so weird about this?
Well, that's
a
good question.
Which is language – is supposed to change. Like language yeah. always changes because it exists in the context in which it's useful. And when people talk about using the wrong words for something, or like if somebody says, I saw this stand-up comic and I literally died, right?
Yeah.
And there they are talking to you. And when they say that, you are not confused. You're not saying, oh my God, you is literally died? How are you okay? How did you get here? Mm-hmm. Did you get resuscitated? Like, you're right. not thinking any of that. All you're thinking is, that must have been real funny, mm-hmm. right? Which means that the words that they're using
are
exactly the right words. Because right?
they mean things.
Yeah, because words are meant to communicate meaning. And if it means exactly, like, you got the meaning right out of it.
Does yeet mean yes, and also I'm a teenager?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it means something like cool. You know, which again, at some point, teens were saying cool, and all the adults were like, well, that's ridiculous. Back in my day, we said groovy, right?
Actually, on this note, we were, Jenny and I were at a restaurant a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so I was looking at the menu. The waiter came over. He's kind of a squirrely dude. And he said,
he's wiggling around.
Yeah, he's very energetic. and so he asked what we were gonna get, and I just said, oh, I'm gonna do whatever the name of the thing was, you know. And then I got confused because then he said something, but I couldn't register because I was just really confused about what was happening. And so he repeated it a bunch of times until I finally registered. And he was just saying it's do not have, or it's have not do. He said it a bunch of times, so I didn't know what the hell was going on.
It's have not do.
He's like, it's have not do.
Sounds like a word.
Yeah.
It's have not do.
So I was just confused rather than I finally got it. And he's like, it's just a pet peeve of mine. It's,
so your waiter corrected you?
So my waiter corrected me.
How was his tip?
It was in Amsterdam, so you don't tip people really. So
interesting.
But it really just threw me off really hard, and then it kind of like put me in a weird space for the first part of while we were eating, because just that happened, because I was like,
oh, so what did you say? Something like, I'll do the lobster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just how we speak colloquially. Right, yeah, you know? And but just the idea that somebody
would get upset about
somebody would be upset about a colloquialism, mm-hmm. because here he also said it's a pet peeve of mine, because of course people say this all the time, mm-hmm. because that's how language works, right?
So he's just chosen to be mad about every other person saying, yeah, I'll do the lobster. Yeah.
And then
I'll
to make sure
the,
that
I'll
he
do the clams.
Make sure that he tells the patrons of this restaurant.
Interesting.
He's correcting, he's fixing language one patron at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never liked that, because it's always that question to me of, well, did you understand what the hell I was saying? We used to have this teacher who you go up and ask if you – can I go to the bathroom? He'd go, I don't know, can you? And you'd say, shut up. You know what I mean? You want me to pee on your desk, or you let me go to the bathroom and pee? And he's like, you have to say may.
Right.
May
even
I.
Though
– I'm like, you know what I mean.
Right. Yep. But even though it actually – and the crazier thing about that is correct. Because you cannot go to the bathroom
without
that person
power.
Saying that you can, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So can or may, you know, they both.
He's not recognizing the power structure situation here.
Because like what?
Well, he is and he isn't. He's not recognizing how absolute it is, mm-hmm. you know? Because like, he was like, may, it's just like, it's like a gentle ask for permission, you know? It's like, mm-hmm. I mean, of course you can do whatever you want, but it's really best if you, but no, if you walk out that door, you're getting thrown in jail.
Yeah.
Because that's how school works.
Yep. Yeah. Because you didn't have a hall pass.
Yeah.
And you just sort of violated the Geneva Convention.
Yep. Yeah, straight to jail.
That's a war crime.
Which is interesting because you always have the argument of, I mean, words, of course, matter a ton, and the words you use to describe things matter a ton. But also, generally, you can understand the meaning or the intention of whatever someone's talking about, almost even if they're speaking nearly in jargon or in a completely like a teenage
way.
Except
for business jargon, I can't understand any of that.
It's not meant for you.
That's true.
It's meant for shareholders and stakeholders. And holders of other things.
Holders of all the things.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. It was an interesting reflection point for me.
Because who cares?
Well, yeah, just to think. Who you know, cares? It's actually – it's a lot – there is no such thing as correct language.
No, it's a tool.
Yeah, it's a tool for communication. And if I understood what they meant, I could, you know, I could just ruin this interaction just right out of the gate and just be like, let me just stop you right there and tell you that you're wrong. Because people love that.
It's have not do.
Yeah, it's have not do. And like, so when you ordered that lobster or whatever it was.
It was a pile of anchovies. A pile of anchovies.
So
in the shape of a lobster.
Yeah, man.
Because here's the thing. I would argue that do is more correct because you are going to do something to those anchovies and you're not going to have them when you're done.
Yeah. This is like that sort of
you can't have your cake and eat it too, right?
You have to – you do.
You do that cake. You get in there and you just do stuff to it. Put it in your mouth. Eat it. Cover your face with it. It is gone now. You don't have that cake anymore.
And you actually, when you get food, you do a lot of things because you dip it and stuff, you know, you like cut it. You know, all kinds of things happen. So I'm not just eating this shit. It's not just going into my stomach with nothing else happening.
You're doing that.
It's not about having a warehouse full of anchovies.
Yeah, frankly, I don't even want it. I'm going to go through the process of putting it in my body. Mm-hmm. That's
so sometimes these things happen and then once you can process it later.
I know, then you're like, oh, I should have said this. Because
what you should have said was, actually, no, it's do, not have.
Ooh, yeah. He would have been like,
and he would have been like, what are you talking about?
And then I could say, no, I'm a linguistics expert.
Yeah.
In that I speak a language.
And I'm not going to have these anchovies. I'm renting them.
Yeah.
Until such time that I could consume them.
I'm renting them for my
verb do.
Yes.
I'm going to borrow these anchovies.
I need to borrow these anchovies for just a minute.
So have you started using eat?
No, I mean, here's the thing. I don't.
You don't need to embrace it that hard.
I don't need to embrace. I'm okay with people using it. It just feels weird and hard to say. So I'm just not going to do it.
But also, you know.
But
the whole idea of how words evolve is that people from different groups kind of. They invent them and they use them as a way to sort of identify each other and all
in group status. Yeah.
Yeah. So there
teens
are some
have
words
to do this because they live in a weird zone of life where nobody's acknowledging them. So they have to create like an in-group.
Yeah. And it's okay for words not to be for you. You know?
That's
like
true.
Words from some other sort of subculture. You don't have to have everything. Mm-hmm. You know, just fucking take
it. You got enough words.
You got 100,000 of them.
Use the word cool.
English is pretty good at taking words. That's kind of our thing.
I mean, that's true, but we take them in groups. And so we say, these are my words.
We're like,
for now.
German is mine now.
They all kind of move and migrate into other subcultures. And it's all fine. It's just that if a new word like yeet comes up,
and you don't like it.
Like, I'm not going to start saying that because I'm not a teenager. But in 10 years, once eat is just a thing that everybody says, like, I'll be saying that shit all the time. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. It would probably be strange if you show up in high school and you're like, this is pretty yeet, kids.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, don't.
Yeah.
Yeet is the new Facebook. Now all the parents are doing it.
Oh, God.
And the teens are like, we need a new word.
And that's actually true. Most new words will become lame and stupid before they get mainstream anyway. Correct. So, you can just ignore it. It's fine. You know?
Yeah.
What's your bet? So it's like a 10-year bet. Is yeet going to be in the common vernacular?
Yeet's a tiny drop in the historical bucket.
Do you think it's going to appear on?
No, it's too hard to say.
It's too hard to say. Too pointless. It's going to be a thing that kids say on Reddit for like 3 months and then
all right,
in the wind.
Butterscotch Stradamus. We'll check it out.
All right. Write that down. All right. Next question. Speaking of language, comes from One Dead Saint. I have refactored the phrase, you just got to get in there. The you is implied, so I'm going to drop that. The just stays. You got to get implies doing, so that is now do. And in there is too specific, so I'm going to change that to just it. Just do it. Basically, you just got to get in there as a longer version of Nike's slogan. How does that make you guys feel? Discuss.
Pretty good, because it's one of the best slogans probably ever made by any business ever.
And if we were using it, then we'd be in violation of their trademark. And so that would probably be a legal issue.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and Nike, really, really what they're trying to say is quit fucking around, guys. Mm-hmm. Get out there and do sports. You know, that's the extended version of their.
Yep.
But the stakeholders didn't want it.
Here's the other problem, though, is people hate being told what to do. Mm-hmm. The way it's written for Nike is like, just do it.
Yeah.
Right. Which is a command. It's a demand. And nobody likes it. This is the reason that nobody's just doing it.
Because Nike.
Who the fuck are you to tell me
Nike,
to do it?
I mean, the people would be just doing it all the time.
Yeah.
But because Nike was so forward about it, everybody kind of
pushed
back.
But in that framing, with the way that the gist is in there, the implication is that this is This is not this even is hard. Trivial. Just get,
yeah.
What are you doing mm-hmm. with your What are you doing with your life? You are mm-hmm. a walking disaster. This is how I feel about Nike's slogan.
Right.
It's just telling me that I'm a garbage piece of, you know, human detritus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I get out of it also.
Exactly. Yeah. Unlike you just got to get it. It's sort of like apologetic. It embraces the fact that you are struggling.
Mm-hmm. It's not a command. It's an answer to exactly. your question. Your question is, how do I do it?
Yeah. If someone said, you just do it, you'd be like, fuck you.
Yeah.
That's a little forward and rude.
But yeah, so you just got to get in there is sort of, it's waiting. It's waiting for somebody mm-hmm. to ask once they're ready mm-hmm. to, yeah. you know, to do their thing. They say, yeah, but how?
It's also, also the case is saying you just do it doesn't actually give you any direction about how to go about
doing it. Well, and I think also it's too goal oriented, yeah. right? Because mm-hmm. we're focusing on where you're at, you know, yeah. Right now you're over there. You're over here. You got to get in there.
Yeah, and there's a big space. It needs to be general because there's a whole bunch. And what? Stuff and here's the
thing.
Out.
Here's mm-hmm. the thing. Once you're in there, it doesn't really matter what you do. You don't have to. True. You don't have to do it.
You could do that.
You could do instead. That. You could do this. You could do all kinds of things. Mm-hmm.
But you as long as
you're in there and doing something, then it's okay.
Yeah, then right? everything's great. You're on the right approach.
Yeah.
So I
think just do it works great if you're a coach and you're telling somebody to run.
Yeah.
Because I guess it's very simple, hierarchical, you know, like
in the context of athletics, it's perfect.
Oh yeah.
Perfect slogan. But I think in the context of
literally anything else.
Real life, you know, trying to learn some skills, do the hard thing, figure out what you're doing even.
First you just gotta get in there.
Get in there. And maybe then get some cool shoes and then just do it.
Then just do it. Well, once you're in there.
Part of getting in there might include just doing it. If getting in there includes like running or something. Mm-hmm. You know?
So just do it is probably actually a subclass. Yeah.
That's like the next step.
It's one of the mm-hmm. mechanisms that you use to get into a specific kind of place. Mm-hmm.
So you'd say you just got to get in there and then just do it.
Yeah.
Once you're in there.
Exactly.
We're going to call Nike for a partnership.
It's a two-step process. Yeah. All right. Next question comes from just some dude. Is water wet? Side question, is fire on fire? So this is
yes and yes.
This is a throwback to a common sort of snide response.
This is a very languagey kind of a.
I like it. It's feeling good. So somebody will say, oh, is this happening? And somebody's like, I don't know. Is water wet? Right. It's
stating the obvious.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God, so obvious.
But the question is it obvious?
Is water truly wet?
Because it depends on which part of the water. Because if you point to any part of the water. If there's other water on it, then it's definitely wet.
So a single water molecule is dry.
Yes.
Yeah. But if there's other water on it, it's wet.
If it's up against another one, that's a wet water.
Yeah, so as long as you have two of them together, then it's wet.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I would argue that because you can't actually see the boundaries of water because molecules are very, very small, mm-hmm. that you could never just point to the entirety of the water. You know, like there's going to be some water that you didn't even know was there.
So really, a water is dry.
But water is wet.
Yes. Yeah.
So the only way to get liquid down to the point where English would consider it a singular noun
is to make it a gas.
Is to have one of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll make it a gas because now any water is not touching any other water, so it's not wet anymore.
Yeah. So is steam wet?
Steam is not wet.
It feels wet.
Steam is water. That's because once it's on you, it's water now.
That's true because ice is also water and that is dry.
Yeah.
Because it's a solid.
Well, until you.
Because the water's got to be wiggling around, you know? Right. So if it's not wiggling, it's not wet anymore.
So wiggling.
So what you're saying is water wet sometimes?
Water's wet if it's wiggling.
If it's wiggling and together.
Yeah.
Water is wet at the right temperature and pressure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
But fire is definitely not on fire. I think that's fair. Because being on fire.
Fire is not on fire?
No. Because fire is the burning of a thing. But
it's the release.
Fire itself is just light. You know, you can't burn light.
Well, you can't.
I mean, neither can you, which is what I say.
I know. I agree with that, too. Yeah.
Nobody can do it.
So the other week, I chopped down a bunch of these honeysuckle plants.
Man, you're really just battling those
They're just destroying. So, but I ended up burning them afterwards.
Yeah. Nice.
And I was looking at the fire.
Way to stick it to them.
Did you take another lighter and then try to light the fire on fire?
No, but when I was looking at the fire, I was like, I don't know what this is. It just happened to me. I was like, what the hell? This
I
is
think
eating
the secret
these.
Is that nobody does.
Like, what the hell is it?
It's magic.
What is it?
People have explained it where they're like, oh, yeah.
It has shapes and everything.
It's light shooting out of things. And I'm like, why? Yeah. What? And then I just go in my backyard and I have a little tiny thing that I put stuff in and then I set them on fire, which is magic, and then you they just turn set into
them on fire. You hold fire on it. Turn now it into becomes
this
fire.
Weird gray stuff,
and it keeps getting hotter.
And it's so hot.
Why does it keep getting hotter?
Honestly, I was looking at it. I was like, I don't know how this works.
It's just, it's just a big fancy chemical reaction because it's just there's oxygen in the air, and the oxygen is like, I want to get in there, and I'm really fucking pumped when I do it, and it's like screams. Mouth is open, it's just screaming into there and shooting light out while it's happening, right? So it's like a rave party that all these oxygen molecules want to be a part of.
This is surprisingly a good metaphor.
So is the shape of the fire then? That's just oxygen's kind of mosh pitting on their way on their way into there.
Definitely. So fire is just an oxygen mosh pit.
Yep.
Is that okay? Yep. No, that honestly that it does explain.
That does a pretty good job.
It is just science. You know?
It is.
But why, when oxygen screams, does it shoot light out of its mouth?
Because it's awesome. You know, like, well, here's if you had the option of shooting light out of your mouth when you were screaming,
that's true. I would do it.
How often would you be screaming?
Basically,
I think I mean, when I took chemistry way back in the day, the most important thing that I remember about oxygen is it doesn't give a fuck.
It really doesn't.
What you think?
No.
Okay.
It's gonna scream and shoot light.
If it's gonna, if it wants to scream and shoot light out of its mouth, no, you're not gonna do anything about it.
It is one of the most dangerous things that there is in terms of, because it wants to just be on everything.
I mean,
but
I got this iron, and oxygen's like, no, you don't. You got rust now. Deal with this.
This is fucking mine, is what oxygen says, and it's screaming again.
All the time.
Do not forget this. It's screaming the entire time.
So we use oxygen for everything.
That's how we can scream.
Yeah.
In biology. Well,
your body, yeah, exactly. Because your body is just screaming constantly. That's how you stay alive. You know?
Yeah. The reason that we're able to use oxygen is because it's always bonding with shit. Mm-hmm. So that means we can make it bond with other things. You know, we breathe, we get oxygen in there. Then it grabs molecules that we need, and then it like moves them to other parts of the body.
It's a very controlled screaming. You know, because now we're telling oxygen, you know, no, sorry, buddy, you can't just do what you want. We need you to do this, but it'll still just do anything just given the opportunity.
So it starts screaming, and then your body takes it, and it's like, no, do that over here. It kind of like points.
Yeah. So oxygen is like the element of just getting in there.
Oh yeah,
because it will just get.
It'll
in
just get in
everywhere,
and it'll just. Do
oxygen
it.
Is required for fire, but also it's what water is made of. Yeah. But also it's what you're made of.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oxygen is pretty fucking awesome.
We are really just,
man, I want to do a
we're
chemistry
really just slow fires.
I want to do a chemistry podcast where Adam just teaches us about chemistry.
Through anthropomorphized,
yeah, we'd have 100 and what, however the fuck many chemical elements there are.
There's like a jillion,
and then just every episode we would just walk through one.
What is it?
What even is this? And the beauty is that because I'm not a scientist anymore, I don't have to be accurate.
All right, and listen,
you know? I can just say
you
whatever
can just
I
say
want.
Whatever the fuck you want because it's the internet.
Yeah,
you know,
do whatever you want.
I saw a blimp. Okay, the PGA Tour was in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
And that weird-ass blimp about tires was floating around.
The Goodyear blimp.
Yeah, the tire.
It's kind of weird blimp. That that's their thing, you know?
There's the like, one thing that doesn't have tires. Like, yeah. It could have been an airplane.
That has tires.
That has tires. Helicopters, those can have tires. Blimps, they would not – you never put tires on a blimp. That's crazy. Maybe a boat. I guess it could have been a boat.
Maybe a tire is just, or a blimp is just like a big
– it's a big
inflated
tire.
With
like a house on the bottom.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Maybe it's a statement about how good they are at inflating things and keeping the air in there.
So I was kind of wondering
– it's all about keeping the – like blimps,
you gotta
we
keep
can all
air.
Agree the most important thing is keeping the air in there.
I was wondering, you know, you always hear about these rich folk getting their yachts and then, you know, yachting –
Yachting
into the bay.
Yes,
and shit like
yachts
that.
And yeets.
Mm-hmm.
How come people don't get blimps? Because you can put like a whole house on the bottom of that thing.
Yeah.
And then it just is up there and it doesn't need to use fuel to be up there.
Well, I think people have a potential energy problem, right? Which is that anytime.
But if you fall, then you die.
Yes. Anytime you get in a circle.
It's a serious potential energy problem.
Because if you're on a boat, you can't. You can fall off the boat, but the boat itself probably is just going to be sitting there, right? Unless something catastrophic happens. But a blimp is fighting something in order to do its traveling thing, right? It's fighting gravity. You're fighting the winds, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Which means if for a moment it ceases the fight, then now you have a potential energy problem and you're going to go down into
which is true for boats too. You know?
Yeah, it's true for boats because like as soon as you stop floating, you sink. You know what I mean?
But there's a big difference because you as a person will be able to still float at least a little bit. But you can't float on the air.
But it's also the case that the boat is not expending energy to float.
Well, it's true of a blimp also.
That is true.
It's just filled with gas, right?
Blimps don't give a fuck.
I mean, you got to use a propeller to move it around, but that's true of boats.
Here's the other problem with a blimp.
They get hit by airplanes. That's true.
I mean, there are many problems with blimps, but one of them is that – But you got to be able to stop it from going up more. You know, like a boat, it just is where it is. There's right. no,
well, I mean,
there's
that's
no
what
up.
Space is for.
I mean, it is, but
you don't want to go that high.
But if you just go a little bit too high, now you can't breathe.
Yeah.
But I guess with a boat, though, if you go
too,
low,
too
you
far
can't
down,
either,
you can't yeah. breathe either. See what I'm saying? Is blimps are just boats of the sky.
They're just upside
and,
down
and
boats.
And it seems like one of the things about being rich is having lots of really inconvenient things, right?
Yeah. Boats, yeah. For well, but you just pay other people to handle the inconvenient
right.
parts.
Doors that open upward on your car, you know, yes. suits that you have to dry clean all the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Cars that are very low, so you're basically laying prone on the ground while you
right.
drive.
You them. Can't see anything. Yeah, but then you pay a driver to drive you around.
Watch someone struggle out of a Lamborghini, which is like the best yeah. thing because you're laying on the pavement and then you have to get up and out.
Yeah, so I think it's
yeah, clothes that are so impractical, you need people who are just around you to keep you from falling and to hold them up mm-hmm. so they don't touch the mm-hmm. dirty ground.
Yeah, so I mean, if that's what wealth looks like, then
yeah,
you would
blimps
think
the way
like
blimps
a blimp is the least convenient and most visually sort of obnoxious thing that
that's
you can
true.
Have.
But simultaneously, here's the thing. There's a problem, though, because it's also got a lot of practicality to it. Because unlike a boat, a blimp can go anywhere.
Well, it can't land anywhere because it's fucking huge.
But it doesn't have to land because, you know, you just get one of those like grappling hook thingies and you just rappel down it or whatever. Yeah. So you can land yourself anywhere out of a blimp. You cannot mm-hmm. land yourself anywhere out of a boat unless you launch yourself via a cannon.
That is true. And anybody who's a billionaire is basically Batman. So they can grapple hook and
yeah,
rappel down pretty much anything.
Yeah.
So
yeah, where's the bat
the bat blimp?
Yeah. I think actually
Alfred,
what we got
fire
to.
Fire up the blimp. I'm going to be there in 6 weeks.
But I think that's what we got to, though, is I think blimps are actually too practical for wealthy people.
Mm,
that's true.
Because they can go anywhere.
That's probably true.
And probably because people get their yacht and then they just leave. They just never go anywhere with it. So yeah. they'll just.
But people can still see how wealthy you are because they can see your yacht floating there, right? But you can't just have your blimp just fucking.
It would be very strange
there.
To sit here with a bunch of blimps just like
tied
just
to it,
floating yeah. around it.
Is that what used to happen back when blimps were a thing?
I don't know if they ever
tied up everywhere.
I don't think they were a thing in like a big way.
I mean, they were because, you know, there was the Hindenburg really kind of turned people off of blimps.
As judge screaming explosions.
Because it exploded into a giant fireball. But, you know, you would go on a cruise.
But it also just turned into a bunch of water, which is kind of beautiful.
It is. You know? But, I mean, it was like a cruise, right? You'd get in this huge floating palace mm-hmm. and then you would just – just
I mean,
kind
we've
of
all
gently,
seen Archer.
You know, just gently you know. Coast along, and mm-hmm. there's like it's catered, and it's all kinds of awesome stuff, right? And you're just hanging from a big balloon. But you know, you never hear about people.
Yeah, I mean, if your
that.
Favorite part of a journey is having it be very slow,
yeah. yes,
blimps are absolutely, absolutely the mechanism you should use.
Yeah,
I think they're like a one-time ride thing. Like you do yeah. it once, and you're like,
I blimped.
I have good. Blump.
I have blump.
I am.
Is it the best?
It's blump.
I mean,
it's
assume.
Blump, not do.
Adam. Yeah, but correct. Yeah,
all right, we got time for one more question. This is from Coffee Chemist. The B-Scotch crew are tasked with going into a deep, dark dungeon.
Why? Who is tasking us with this?
Good question.
We are tasked. It's using the passive voice,
so
which means there's happened. Nobody's responsible for yeah. this. This is just Someone. Something that happened to us. What class are the crew rocking, and what would be the final boss? So what class is everybody?
I guess why do we get to choose the final boss in this dungeon?
But I guess because it sounds like the dungeon is supposed to be a metaphor for what we're doing right now, you know?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You asked the question, you know, why are we heading into this? Who sent us here? We sent ourselves this dungeon.
That we
now.
Just are in
because we're after whatever this boss is slash maybe it has a hoard of treasures.
Yeah.
So the question – there's that metaphor for you. So we sent ourselves this dungeon. What are we trying to get?
So I guess I'm a web programmer then.
It's pretty, yeah, it's pretty class. You're really taking this
class.
Metaphor all yeah. the way to its
and,
logical
and my goal
conclusion.
Is to not be not end up like living on the street.
So somebody yeah. asked me this weekend
for a high level goal.
Uh-huh, yep.
What my five year plan was. You know, people ask you that.
Mm. Yeah.
I actually don't.
Have what?
No anymore. I don't know where – what is happening? Where are
my,
we going?
My five-year plan is to, in a small subset of that, have launched Levelhead.
Yep.
That's it.
That's
all I got.
Part of it.
No, that's it.
It's all part of it.
Because then other things will happen. New opportunities will open up, and then I will do whatever comes next.
Because right, we say that planning is pretending to know the future and then being wrong.
Yeah.
We
so if you have a five-year plan, the question is, what do you want to be wrong about 5 years from now?
Yeah.
But we live in a lot of chaos. I think the last time we talked about our plans for B-Scotch ID, it was still B-Scotch ID for one.
Now it's not.
And then it was going to be – the eventual plan was to do basically what Discord has now done.
And then so we realized we can't.
That we can't like, and Discord yeah. did it.
Yeah,
so
it was too late.
Yeah, we just I don't know what our 5-year plan is.
We're just that would be the boss, you know.
The 5-year plan?
What's the big
defeat it and then we don't have to have one.
Yeah. Well, the goal of beating the boss is then you get the loot and then that lets you go fight the next boss.
True. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So the reality is we just live in this dungeon now.
Are we the boss?
Are we the monsters inside the dungeon?
Are we the heroes, the monsters, the bosses, and the questing system.
So we build the dungeon.
Yeah.
And then we get other people to come into it.
And then we become the thing that we have feared and hated the whole time.
Yes.
But seriously, though, I think we can all agree that being ranged DPS is always better than being melee.
Well, it's only better if you have someone who is melee who's getting punched in the face. Right?
Yes.
You need someone up there.
I think even then it's still better.
Well, you need a tank.
Yeah.
You need a healer. And then you need damage dealers. But you never want to have the melee damage dealers.
No.
Because they
just get hit by stuff all of a sudden time.
The boss is like, I'm going to run over here. And the melee like, oh, fuck. And they got to chase it. Mm-hmm. And then the boss is like, I put fire on the ground. And the melee is like, oh, no. And they got to
move.
And then they're just like standing there because they can't hit anything.
Meanwhile, the ranger just.
Meanwhile, you got somebody back there with a gun just shooting the boss. And they're like, guys, what? Come on.
What do you even do?
I have more of these. Why don't you take one?
Yeah.
Well, this is all about managing chaos, right? Because a boss fight is just it's a chaotic event where the stakes are very high. And the best way to mitigate these things is just to keep them at a little bit of a distance so that you can react to whatever they do. You know?
So stay 40 yards back and shoot
and
it
have
with
a gun.
So if a boss fight is a chaotic event that has a high amount of importance to it, as far as
basically, our launches are boss fights.
Yeah, so Levelhead's launch is the next boss fight.
Yep. I would say Sam is probably the tank for the launch.
For the launch, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because he kind of absorbs a lot of the hits.
Yeah.
I'm probably the healer.
I think Adam's a healer because he makes it, he's systems, buffing everybody, you know, making sure.
And I'm just back there shooting people.
Seth and Shred, they just got guns, you know?
Yeah. Little like mobs pop up and we're just shooting them down, you know, bugs.
Yep.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Now, post-launch, I think we're all just tanks at that point.
No, post-launch, we're all just chilling, you know? We're just
there's the campfire.
That's true, because the thing about launching is we totally plan it perfectly.
100%. Yep.
There's never any problems.
Nope.
And then we just launch it, and we're like, great, we did it, guys. And then we just, buy a blimp.
Well, I think it's actually one of those things where you defeat the boss, and the boss falls over, and then you see that it was just like the front hand of this gigantic, horrifying
boss. All you do is murder a hand, it turned out.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to fight the giant thing.
Which is
post-launch when everything's on fire all the time.
You thought you were fighting a boss and really you were fighting a middle manager.
Yep.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then actually at the next stage of the boss fight, it's just you're on fire now.
Yeah. Yep. Oxygen screaming in the room.
Screaming everywhere.
Okay, where zany. Somebody probably knows this, but where did the term boss come from to describe the person, like the being that you defeat at the end?
Because it must have been done. Somebody must have coined that.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Obviously in relation
I guess kind of maybe it's like there's henchmen that you're fighting or something.
Probably
and then there's a boss who
is in charge boss of the
it's a hierarchical thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't say that it was probably someone who was, you know, getting out some office some rage.
Office angst.
Mm-hmm.
Although, did this
and
happen?
At the end, you kill a boss.
Whoa. Whoa, Jerry.
Whoa.
We're management bosses named after game bosses.
What do you mean?
Like when did this happen? Which came first? You know,
that's true. Mm-hmm. Bosses, as we know them in an office term, may have just been called supervisors or managers.
Yeah.
And then after video games came out and people kept killing bosses, and then eventually people were like, we should
probably call these people.
We should carry this over to kind of get out.
Demonstrate our feelings on the matter. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Somebody tell us this because I'm not gonna look this up.
Yeah, I could Google it like right now, but I said I'm gonna wait like a week.
Yep.
And then just see if somebody told us. Yeah,
I'm curious enough to ask the question, but lazy enough to not look for the answer.
Yep.
Which
well the problem is it won't be an interesting answer.
Yeah.
You know? So
it's probably like Latin. It probably comes from 400 years ago. I don't fucking know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's boss, which was like bossamente.
Maybe it's a German word.
Yeah.
Like bossa nova.
Bossa nova.
Very chilled out though, right? You know?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I don't know what that means.
This is a very language heavy episode.
It is.
I like it. Let's do this again, guys. Mm-hmm. All right, that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producer, Fat Bart, for making us sound good. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. If you'd like to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, you can hop into our Discord server over at discord.gg/bscotch and come say hello. Also, if you'd like to adorn your body with Butterscotch merch or adorn your desk with Butterscotch mug, check out our shop over at shop.bscotch.net. Or if you'd like to send us something like a cement block that you put wood in, we have a mailbox, which you can find the address for.
Please kind of minimize the number of those you send, though.
We have a lot of space.
We need like 3 or 4 more, but then we're
But also
we're
the thing about cement is that it's pretty fucking heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It is.
We're on the second floor. If I'm pretty sure the manager of this office space will be very upset if the floor collapses.
Mm-hmm. They're like, what happened? We'd be like, I don't know.
We probably just got a lot of cement.
On the other hand, that's what insurance is for.
It is what insurance is
for. You know, so maybe it's fine.
So we already have paid for it. So send away.
Yeah. The bigger the better.
And last but not least, if you'd like to buy us a cup of coffee to help offset the cost of the podcast, you can go over to moneygrab.bscotch.net. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.